Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 208, really, and we're going to do something we've never done before, and that is to suggest that yes, you can have air conditioning in your van, and you can do it off the grid. Oh, we're also going to talk about why you should drill, baby, drill. And we'll have a product review of a bladder, which is better than it sounds, and a tale from the road involving a famous Mythbuster. By request, someone asked me to do that. Anyway, welcome to episode 208. You may have noticed last week that I said that was 208, and that was an error. This is 208. Last week was 207.
It's just a number.
It has been somewhat traditional for me since I started this podcast to do an episode every spring where I said something to the effect of, no, you can't have air conditioning in your van unless you have shore power. It's too expensive. It's too complicated. It's too many twos. It's too extreme. And now for the first time ever in, what, I guess 4 years now? 5 years? I don't know how long I've been doing this. I'm going to say it is possible. It is possible. That's not to say it's easy. But it is more doable now than it ever has been in all of history. And I'm going to talk about the most budget-friendly way to do this. So we're going to ignore the 12-volt AC units that go on your roof or whatever. They're expensive and they can work, but we're going to ignore them for now. What I'm going to talk about is a way that you, with just parts you can get locally or from Amazon, can have air conditioning in your rig in a weekend without spending too much money and without too much hassle. But this isn't easy. Now, this is four parts. There's four parts to the problem of having air conditioning in your van. The first part is to get an air conditioner. Now, the air conditioner I'm recommending, and there are many that fit this, is an Amazon Basics air conditioner. It's $150 right now. Brand new air conditioner, $150, and it's 5,000 BTUs, which is enough to cool, they say, 150 square feet, which is good enough. It's good enough, and the reason it's good enough is because you care more about how much power it's drawing than how much cooling it can do. Oh, sure, you can buy a bigger air conditioner, but then you're increasing all your other problems. And let's also keep in mind here that one of the primary purposes of air conditioning isn't just temperature, it's dehumidification. And I know from my personal experience that I can sleep in a room if it's 80 degrees Fahrenheit, as long as it's dry enough. But if the humidity is way up there, I have a much harder time. And an air conditioner, even run just for half an hour, can remove enough of that humidity that I can get to sleep. So even at just 5,000 BTUs, it's going to be enough to make you a lot more comfortable in all but the most extreme summer conditions. Folks, if you're thinking about camping in Phoenix, Arizona this summer, this isn't the solution for you. You are going to need shore power and a lot more air conditioning. And I would say, get the heck out of Phoenix. Go there in the winter. So, you need the air conditioner. Again, I have this link to one, Amazon Basics, basic air conditioner, 5,000 BTU, nothing fancy, it just has some knobs, doesn't have a remote control. I figure that's all good. You want it to be as simple as possible. And here's the important part. It draws 450 watts. Now, we need to do a little math here, but I'm going to do it for you. It's actually not very hard. Watts, as we know, is amps times volts. Now, you are going to have to use this with an inverter, and you're going to want at least a 2,000-watt inverter. And you might say, but Jeff, it only draws 450 watts. Why do I need a 2,000-watt inverter? And that's because air conditioners, like many other appliances, have a surge when you first start them. They draw a lot more power for the first second or two, and your inverter needs to be able to handle that. So 2,000 should be good. You want to get a pure sine inverter. There's no reason to get anything but a pure sine inverter these days. So you've just spent $150 on the air conditioner, maybe $300 for the inverter, maybe $200. There's a bunch of different ways to do that. Okay, that's the basics you need. Now, of course, you've got the air conditioner hooked up to the inverter, and then the inverter is going to go to the battery. Now, Here's where we have to do the math for you. It's 450 watts, right? Divided by 12 volts, which is the nominal voltage of most vehicles, that comes out to be 37.5 amps. So let's just call that 40 amps, just for chuckles. That means that this air conditioner, when it's on full blast, is going to draw 40 amps. Now, if you have a 200 amp hour battery, that means if you use up the entirety of the battery, which isn't always wise, you can run this for 5 hours. But we'll be conservative, so let's say 4 hours, because you want to leave a little bit of capacity in your battery, plus you need it to run other stuff like lights and your water pump. You can get 4 hours of AC out of a 200 amp hour battery, and that's not nothing. I mean, if you are thinking about how you're going to use this practically, you're not going to be sitting in your van all day with the air conditioner running. Now, those of you with pets have a separate problem. But for most people, you are living out of your van, not in your van, and you're going to be doing stuff during the day. It's at night where this is a problem. And so what you could easily do is run the AC for an hour or two at night, get rid of the humidity, lower the temp in the van, and I think you're going to be golden. There's two other things we haven't talked about with this. One is the installation. How do you install one of these things? So this is just a window unit we're talking about. The other units, the ones that have hoses, are somewhat easier to install in a van. Like, you can put it in your passenger seat and then have the hose or hoses. The two hose ones are better than the one hose ones. Go out the passenger side window and you can make a little template for it. But they're really inefficient, and they're not as good, so we're going to ignore them. Plus, they're more expensive. No, so we're just talking about your normal window unit air conditioner here. And the answer is you need to make a hole in your van. You need to make a big hole in your van. Now, one of the classic ways of installing one of these is out the back window. And you see this actually still, is old Ford Econo lines with the air conditioner sticking out the back window. Yeah, that's pretty easy to do. You take out the existing glass, you make a plywood template that has a cutout for the air conditioner, and you very carefully attach the plywood to the door and then the air conditioner to the plywood. And then generally, you do this on the driver's side door, and then you don't open it, because this is going to be hard on the hinges, because air conditioners weigh a lot. If you do open that door, you want to be very careful about it, because you're exceeding the recommended specifications of the hinges. Kind of like if you have a spare tire mounted on there, that's not recommended either. Now, there's other ways to do this, and you have a little bit of a conundrum here. Because it's an air conditioner, because it's blowing cold air, you want it to be as close to the ceiling as possible, because then the cold air falls. Whereas if you have it down low, the cold air is just going to pool, and you're going to have your nice, comfortable ankles at 60 degrees, and it's still going to be 90 degrees at the ceiling. But they're heavy, and you don't want weight near the ceiling, right? So you've got this compromise problem to deal with. Some professional RV makers, such as Road Trek, actually use this type of air conditioner, and where they put them is in the high roof directly over the back doors in the center. They center the weight, and that actually works really well, but that's a heck of a lot of fabrication that I think would be hard to do. Another solution I've seen that I think could work, it probably will work, is you cut a hole in the side of your van and you cut a hole in the floor of your van. Now, floor holes are tricky because you have to be careful about exhaust getting up in there. So I'm not thrilled with this idea, and I can't recommend it honestly, but it is something you can do if you do the proper research to make sure it's safe. And the idea is that you'll have airflow out the side of the van and then out the floor. And you just need to add a lot of airflow, because these air conditioners are designed to be sticking out in the air and to have airflow from the back and the sides and the top and bottom. If you stick this in your van, you have to replicate that somehow. And if you don't have that airflow, they're going to be a lot less efficient. I mean, you could even consider installing another fan to kind of get the air out. So that's the tricky part. Installing this rather large object is going to take some thought. And if you don't want it to stick out your van, you're going to have to make some kind of a cooling cabinet that has lots of holes on the outside. One idea is to buy a generator door They make doors just for generators, and they're vented. I mean, generators have a similar problem. They need a lot of ventilation. And put that in so it is your ventilation on one of the sides, and then you have a nice clean look, and then also have some sort of hole in the floor for ventilation. And then to seal that all up, almost like it's a propane cabinet, so no exhaust can get in. That is a tough problem to solve, but it is solvable, and people have done it. And if you search on YouTube for air conditioner installations, you will see people who have done it. And finally, the last problem, and this is not a small problem, it's a pretty significant one, is how the heck are you going to charge this? So this is going to use a lot of battery power. And okay, 200 amps isn't that much of a burden to charge. My 300 amp solar panels will just about recharge my 200 amp hour batteries on a normal day. I also have a battery to battery charger, so when I'm driving, that helps too. And I don't have an air conditioner in my van, so let's be clear, but I'm not having trouble charging my batteries with that setup. But if you wanted more power, let's say you had 400 amp hours of battery, then you're getting into the territory where if you used the air conditioner a few days in a row, you're going to deplete your batteries and you're going to have to find a way to charge them. So you're going to want to maximize your solar, have as much solar as possible, maybe even some supplemental panels. You have some on the roof and you also put some on the sides, or you have loose ones that are just out, you know, on stands. And you may want to consider either a second alternator or a bigger alternator. And that's a whole other thing. So what I would recommend is, if you want to try this, do a dry run first. Buy the air conditioner and the inverter and the batteries. If this doesn't work out, you're still going to use the inverter and the batteries. That's not a waste. The air conditioner is a $150 gamble, and you could return it. But go ahead and just loosely fit it in like the back door. Don't cut any holes or anything, and run it for a while. And see what happens. See how, watch your battery drain, see how much cold air comes out, see if it's going to work. And if you're really happy with the results, then you can invest the time and effort into building some sort of a cabinet for it or mounting it on the back window or something like that. Unfortunately, everything you do to modify the air conditioner is going to reduce its efficiency. If you don't have it just sticking out into space, you're going to reduce efficiency. So it is a trade-off. I know it's ugly to have it sticking out the back window, but honestly, that is probably the most efficient place to put it. And some people have even made sliders where they can slide the air conditioner in while they're driving, and then they have like a vinyl snap-on cover that goes over it. And then when they're parked, they take the snap-on cover off and then push the air conditioner out with sliders. That's a pretty clever thing, but I think that would require more fabrication than I could do. Anyway, ultimately, this is good news. You can have air conditioning in your van. Is it going to be enough to keep your pets in the van all day while you're off at work or whatever? No. Not likely. Is it going to be enough to make it cool enough so you can sleep on some extra hot days? Yeah, I think it is. And to me, that's the main purpose of air conditioning. Thank you to Kent, Giuseppe, and Scott for buying me gallons of diesel at buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. Their support and the support of others, especially those folks who became members and donate every month, are the reason that there are no ads on this podcast, and I am very thankful to that. If you would like to become part of this, go ahead and visit buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go, and you will have my thanks and the thanks of everybody else who doesn't have to listen to any more of a commercial than this. Van life news. A little bit of news, Supreme Court news that could sort of affect us. This is an interesting case to look at no matter what. If you're at all concerned about the situation of homelessness or unhousedness or whatever term you prefer, the Supreme Court was hearing a case about the town of Grants Pass, Oregon, which happens to be where I picked up the Tiki Bago. I drove the Tiki Bago, which is a 1973 Winnebago Indian D22, all the way from Grants Pass to central Illinois through Montana. I've told many stories about that. But yeah, Grants Pass is where I actually picked the thing up. Grants Pass has a homelessness problem, people sleeping on the streets, etc., just like many places do. But they actually have passed laws against it. And that's gone all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court is trying to figure out whether it should be allowed for local municipalities basically to let homelessness be illegal. Now, again, this show, this podcast is not to talk about politics or religion. This is not the purpose here. But there's a couple of interesting things in here to look at. And one was the testimony of a police officer who said, "We're not going to prosecute somebody who's laying on a blanket stargazing. We're only going to prosecute people who look like they're homeless." Yikes. And I say yikes because that means that and this is what my big fear is that they're going to create laws that don't apply to everybody, but only apply to the people that the cops want them to. So if you're all, clean cut and you look like you've had a shower that day and you've laid a blanket out in the park and you're looking up at the stars, they're not going to mess with you. But, if you're looking a little scruffy and instead of a blanket laying out, you have a sleeping bag out there, then they might give you a ticket. And if you don't pay that ticket immediately, it goes up to like $550. I am not thrilled with that, and I do absolutely think this is going to apply to van life. If you roll in with your new Winnebago Revel and park on the street, maybe they'll leave you alone. But if you've got your 1988 Econoline that maybe looks a little rough on the outside, but you've kitted out to be your home, then you're going to get a fine. Not a fan of this. I don't know that the Supreme Court can fix this in any meaningful way, but it's an interesting case to look at, nonetheless. On the other side of things, I found this welcome article in the Southeast Iowa Union newspaper, and that is that Jefferson County is going to construct a 14-stall campground for us. And I think this is a great approach. They're going to create a little campground to try to encourage tourism in the area, and anyone can just go and stay there. And there may be a small fee, but it doesn't matter. They're looking at the influx of travelers and trying to solve the problem constructively. And I think that's a great thing, and I celebrate it. So I will have a link in the show notes to that whole story if you're ever driving through Jefferson County in southeastern Iowa and you're looking for a place to stay. This might be something to look at. And I will once again shout out to Aurora, Nebraska, who does this in spades. They have a 20-site campground that is free, including power and water and a flush toilet and a dump station. Completely free, right off of I-80. I stop there every time I go by, and wow, I would like to see a lot more of that. Now, you can say, but those campgrounds are going to attract the homeless, and then we're back into the whole conversation again. All I can say is that that hasn't been a problem in Aurora, Nebraska. They have a 4-night limit, and I think that kind of solves the problem. You just have a night limit that makes sense, and then you can enforce that without worrying about any other factor. You just enforce that, whether they're in a Revel or a beat-up Econoline. Doesn't matter. And finally, as another encouraging article, Slash Gear has a list of vans that have really good gas mileage. Now, this is a list of minivans, and it's a little bittersweet in a way, because the van that has the best mileage, the minivan they call it, is the Ford Transit Connect, which is no longer made, sadly. And it's too bad, because I do not understand what automakers in the U.S. are thinking. I'm positive this is because of CAFE laws or something like that, but they have stopped making all the small cargo vans. There are none available to buy in the U.S. at all. None of them. The NV200, the ProMaster City, and the Ford Transit are all gone, as is the Grand Caravan. They used to have a cargo van version of that, gone. And it's a shame. These were a niche vehicle that were perfect for us, but also perfect for deliveries in the city. I mean, holy cow, I live in Chicago, pretty close to downtown, and the streets are clogged with vans. And a lot of these vans don't need to be as big as they are. Florists don't typically need a Sprinter. They could get around in any old thing. And now their only choice is basically minivans that are filled with seats and airbags and stuff like that. But anyway, the rest of the article basically points out that if you are driving a minivan, you can expect about 22 miles a gallon, unless you get a hybrid. The Honda and Toyota hybrids are getting in the mid-30s. And, that's a pretty good deal. Actually, the Chrysler Pacific hybrid only gets 30, which is interesting. But let's just look at the Sienna, which has often been called best minivan to convert. 36 miles a gallon. Now, a lot of people don't consider gas mileage, but I can tell you it makes a huge difference. Now that I have this truck, and the Sprinter, and I'm comparing mileage between the two. And yes, as many of you suspected, the mileage I'm getting in the truck is not as good as I originally had hoped. Over time, I'm seeing that I was really optimistic with my 25 miles a gallon. It's more like 21 or 22. Still, the difference in cost between that and just like 16 or 17 is substantial. To go up to 36 miles a gallon, basically, compared to, say, an Econoline, you're cutting your fuel costs in third. You're paying one-third the fuel costs in a Toyota Sienna Hybrid versus an Econoline. That's a lot of money. And is that worth spending $10,000 more for the van to start with? Although, in this case, a Sienna versus an Econoline is more like $40,000 more. Yeah, it might be. But definitely do not overlook mileage when you're purchasing your van. And I have a link in the show notes to the article. But yeah, all the minivans are getting over 20 miles a gallon now, which is pretty good. I think we should see more minivan campers out there. I think they're a good solution, especially if you're not 6 feet tall. Tech Talk. I see a lot of posts about, oh, I want to put solar on my roof, but I don't want to drill any holes, or I want to do this, I don't want, no holes, I don't want to drill any holes, I don't want to drill, folks, drill baby drill. I mean that in a completely non-political sense. Go ahead and drill the holes, and this is why. If you drill a hole in your rig, and you plan it out, you drill the right size hole in the right place. That is the perfect solution for whatever you're trying to solve. If you're trying to get solar panel wires in your van, drill a hole in the proper place. Cover it with a gland if you need to. Use a grommet, whatever. But by doing that, you're going to have the shortest necessary cable run. You're going to have the hole exactly where it should be. And you're not going to have to do any futzing around with like making the cables longer or running them through a back window and then putting them in the headliner and all that. It'll just be where it's supposed to be. And I know the things you're worried about. You're like, oh, I'm going to compromise the integrity of the vehicle. Or the big one, it's going to leak. No, it's not. Drilled holes in your roof are very rarely the source of the leaks in your vehicle. They're very easy to seal properly. In the case of solar, one of the most common things to do, what I have done, is you install a gland and you screw it to the roof using stainless steel screws, and you screw through some butyl tape, and then you cover the screws and the sides with Dicor or some other self-leveling sealant, and that is not going to leak. They just don't leak. Leaks usually come from seams, like around big cuts, like ceiling fans, or the seams that are actually intrinsic to the construction of the vehicle. Those seams leak too. Or from marker lights. Marker lights, the way they're installed at the factory, especially on ProMasters, are notorious for leaking, and it's because they're just a plastic thing with a little bit of foam on it that's screwed in. If that screw backs out even a tiny little bit, yeah, water can get in there, and it's at a terrible angle. The water goes right in the roof and then moves around and then comes out wherever, and you don't know where it's coming from, but it's probably the marker lights. That's the first thing I would check. Third eye brake light, same thing. So my advice is, do some careful planning and go ahead and drill the hole. For me, drilling holes is just normal. I used to be a two-way radio and cell phone installer back in the 80s. This is when cell phones had to be installed in vehicles. There was a part in the trunk and a part up front and lots of wires. And the antenna went on the roof. And we would just drill a hole in the roof, and we didn't think anything of it. And then later on, if they brought their car in because they were trading it in and taking out the radio, they just put a plug in the hole. And it was fine. And not once ever did we have anybody complain of a leak. So don't be afraid of drilling a hole through your roof. Just do your research. It's not hard to do it right, and you're going to be fine. Product review. I have a little problem in Tiki Bagoland is that I don't have a source of water, despite being right on the river, and despite there being at least two wells on the property, neither one of them is in working order, and I might be able to get them working at some point, but right now I just want some water for right now. I have water in Chicago, so how do I get the water from Chicago down to Tiki Bagoland, as I call it? It's about 100 miles away. What I have been doing is using those 6-gallon jerry cans from Walmart and those pop-up blue containers, but they're heavy, they kind of leak, they're messy. I don't know. It's a pain in the butt to deal with this problem 6 gallons at a time. So I went on Amazon and I found these things that I thought must exist, and they do, and I found a 61-gallon water bladder. So this is just a massive bag that you fill with water. And now that I have the pickup truck, all I do is I stick the bladder in the back of the pickup truck and pull it up to the hose bib in my condo, and I fill it up. It takes a few minutes, and then I have 61 gallons of water that I can just hook a pump up to and then fill up the Airstream or the Tiki Bago or the Scamp or whatever I need to fill up. And it works great. And the best part is it's only $35. Now, I don't know what application you would use this for. I mean, imagine a big bag of water. So it's 8 pounds, 6 ounces per gallon of water times 61. And you get the picture. You're talking about hundreds of pounds of water here. You're not going to be able to move this bag when it's full. For me, it's in the back of the pickup truck. So I move the pickup truck where I need the water to be. You can't pick this thing up. And I don't think this is a replacement for a water tank. You could use this as a water tank in your van. What you would have to do is create a cabinet big enough to hold the bladder. And you would need to fill the bladder with pressure. Like, you would need a pressured hose. It would be very difficult to fill it just by dumping water in. It might be doable, but I don't think it's the best idea. And you might think, well, what about air? Well, it's interesting that the bladder has no air in it. It just has water. And it expands as you add the water until it's full, and then you close it. So there's no air in there. It's just literally a bag of water. A little air might get in, and there's a cap at the top, and you can bleed that out. But this thing will shrink down as the water empties and becomes very, very small. It's made out of a very durable, heavy, heavy-duty, kind of like rubberized plastic, although I'm sure it's not actually rubber, and it has 4 tie-downs. And for me, I just put it in the back of the truck, and I tie it down at the 4 corners, and that's it. And I have a little 12-volt water pump that I can hook up to it, just with a normal garden hose, and then I can pump it into whatever I want, and it has worked great. And heck, for $35, it's a really easy way to bring a lot of water a long way. If you think you have a need for something like this, and again, I can't think of an exact way to use it in a normal van build, for $35, this thing is great. And you don't have to fill it all up. You know, if you only need 10 gallons, just add 10 gallons. It will assume the size of whatever the liquid is in it. And I don't know. I really like it. Link in the show notes. It is a 61-gallon water bladder, and I think it's a good solution for those cases where you need it. Tales from the road. So it came up in Discord a while ago. Somebody posted something about Adam Savage. So Adam Savage is an icon today. Most people know him from the Mythbusters. A few people might know him from the Mr. Whipple Charmin commercials, where he was the red-haired kid that Mr. Whipple did stuff with. He was also in a Billy Joel video. I mean, he's had a weird career for sure. But he's mostly known for Mythbusters, and now he has his own very successful YouTube series where he talks about building things and props from old movies and stuff. There was a time in my life where Adam and I were on a first-name basis. And I won't say we were friends, because it's not like I could just call him up and say, hey, Adam, how's it going? But we were certainly friendly, and we had a number of private conversations. And I would just like to share a couple of moments I've had with Adam. Adam is actually, he's exactly the guy you see on TV, which I think is fascinating. In fact, almost, I got to meet, I think, all of the Mythbusters at one point or another. They are pretty much what you see on TV. They're very genuine. Adam especially. He is honest and authentic, and what you see is what you get. He is a no BS guy, and yet remains positive and friendly at the same time, which I think makes him entirely endearing. One example of that is, we were at a fundraising dinner. You know, beers in hand, we're just sitting there chatting, and I brought up an idea. And now, this idea involved both politics and religion, so I'm not going to tell you the idea. It doesn't matter. I brought up the idea, and I said, hey, Adam, what do you think of this? And he stopped, looked me in the eyes, and said, that is the stupidest idea I have ever heard. And now, coming from some people, that might be a little bit offensive. But he was able to say that in a genuine way, and then we had a conversation about why he thought it was the stupidest idea ever, and it was great. I learned a lot about a different perspective on this idea I had. There was no animosity at all. Either way, he didn't have a problem with me having a stupid idea. He just thought it was stupid, and he wanted to explain why. And I really appreciated that moment, and actually, over time, I've come to agree with him that it was kind of a stupid idea. And the reason I know Adam isn't that I ran into him on the street. He was an invited guest at a conference I used to help organize called The Amazing Meeting every year in Vegas. And that was James the Amazing Randy's meeting. And Adam was a fan of Randy, so that's why he was there. So I would interact with him arranging hotel rooms and such for him, etc. You get it. But one year he gave a talk that I thought was brilliant. And actually would love to find a copy of this talk, but I don't know where those tapes are anymore. Where he just talked about all the stuff he failed at. It was a 45-minute talk about all the times that Adam Savage sucked, that he did. And I thought it was just so genuine and useful because, you know, we, the consuming public, don't see the suckitude. We only see all the successes. We see Adam Savage on Mythbusters and Adam Savage on YouTube and Adam Savage who did a lot of the props for the Star Wars movies. And look at this incredibly successful guy. And we don't see the time that he spent 2 weeks trying to make a machine only to just give up on it because it didn't work. Or the times that Mythbusters worked on entire episodes and then just didn't air them because they ended up being stupid, that kind of thing. But he exposed that to all of us, and I thought that was a generous thing for him to do and also very useful. Nowadays, Adam probably doesn't remember who I am, and that's okay. There's a lot of people who don't remember who I am, and I'm kind of glad about some of them. But I cherish those memories with Adam, and I have the highest respect for him, and heck, some folks asked me to tell you some stories about Adam Savage, and, well, that's what I got. A place to visit. Manitowoc, Wisconsin may not sound like a very exotic place to visit, but something happened there that is just, it's just a crazy story, and you can go see some of it. Now, Manitowoc is well known in the Midwest, not only because they have a World War II submarine you can visit, which is nice, but they also have the terminus of the SS Badger. The SS Badger is the last coal-fired ferry, and it runs across Lake Michigan at the northern part from Manitowoc to Ludington, Michigan, and back. And it's like a time warp. I love riding on the Badger. You can get a cabin, you can play bingo, you can have dinner. There's even a little museum on the ship. I mean, it's just, it's such an unusual thing. And I don't know how much longer it's going to be able to keep running. Coal-fired ships are not long for this world. But it's a fascinating experience, and you can bring your van. So if you're interested in something interesting, or you're doing the Great Circle around the lakes or whatever, go ahead and give the Badger a thought. But that's actually not what I want to talk about, because, you know, I'm a rambler. At the RAR West Art Museum, that's R-A-H-R West Art Museum in Manitowoc on North Street, in the pavement in the street in front, like right in the street where people are driving, there is a brass ring, and it is the size of a small plate, like the plate you would get your cake on at the end of the meal. And it's just there, and there's no sign, there's nothing about it, and you might not think anything of it. You might think it was an old piece of plumbing, or it was a piece of some road construction or whatever. But no, it's a piece of Sputnik. It is a piece of a Soviet space mission that went wrong. And the story basically is on May 15th, 1960, the Russians, the Soviets back then, launched Sputnik 4. And it was the first Sputnik to have a person in it. Now, it wasn't a real person. It was a dummy. And the dummy had the name Ivan Ivanovich. But he was completely kitted up. He had the first fully functional spacesuit, and it was, you know, he was pressurized, and they were basically trying to, you know, test to see, hey, can we send people up in one of these things? And it was supposed to go around the Earth a couple times and come back, and then they were going to investigate it and see if anything bad happened, like did the helmet crack or anything like that. And Unfortunately, someone had entered coordinates backwards at some level, and when the capsule that had the person separated from the rest of the satellite, it went up instead of down. And they were like, ah, and then they had no idea where it was going to go. And in fact, where it went was into the atmosphere, and it broke up. But two pieces of it landed in Manitowoc, one of them right in that circle on the street. It smashed right into the street. And it was found by a police officer. And then there was all kinds of intrigue about Russian agents showing up in town to try to claim it. And then the museum where it landed right in front of, like hiding it in the basement. And there's all kinds of crazy stuff. And the other piece landed on a church roof and no one actually knows where that piece went. Now, this wasn't a huge piece. It was 20 by 8 centimeters, you know, not huge. But heck, what a history-making thing that a spacecraft crash landed in Manitowoc, and you can actually go see it. A weird little thing here. This thing actually created some weird minerals as it landed. They are wustite and aconite, aconeite, however you pronounce that word. It made that too, because it turns out that when you have a lot of heat and a lot of exotic materials, they will turn into other exotic materials when they land. So officially, the U.S. government offered the pieces back to the Soviets, and they didn't want it, and then finally they agreed to accept it, and they were very quiet about it, because for them, this was an embarrassment. It was a failed mission. There's another conspiracy about it actually having a real person in it, and people picking up the radio signals of a dying man's heartbeat, etc. You can read all about that. I'll have a link in the show notes, but yeah, it's kind of a cool thing that you can just, you know, go ahead, go to Ludington, take the Badger over, visit the submarine, and then have a drive down North Street at the Raw West Museum, and just look in the street, and you'll see this brass ring, and know what a momentous piece of history happened right there. Resource recommendation. For those of you with more money than time, dealing with mattress sizes can be a problem. Like, if you're building your own bed, or even if you have a built-out Class B or whatever, finding the right size mattress can be difficult. I know this sounds like a commercial, and I know all the YouTube people are doing commercials for this. This is not a commercial. In fact, this is for a totally different site. This is for Tochta, TOCHTA.com. The reason I am talking about Tochta.com is that they have a calculator where you can just go in and type in everything you need about your mattress. How long does it need to be? How wide does it need to be? How thick? And then, really important, what do you want the corners to be? You can have them be any radius of rounded. You can have them cut out like a notch, like maybe you have a pillar that you need to cut out around. In my Tiki Bago, I actually have a cutout in the mattress for the fuse panel, the circuit breakers. For some reason, they put that in the bed. I don't know. But yeah, if you need a weird custom mattress and you want to see how much it would cost, these people can do it. And I'll tell you, it's not cheap. I looked at a mattress, a low-end mattress with a lot of cuts, and it was about $800. But it would be ready in 3 days. So if you've just spent like months building out your van and you're just tired, you just want to get it done, it actually might be worth $800 for you to just have them make the stupid mattress and mail it to you. Anyway, it's just one of many options for this. This one is an easy one. And what I really like is that their tool lets you price it online and you can get an idea of how much it's going to cost. So again, that's Tochta.com, T-O-C-H-T-A.com. And I hope you find it useful if that's something you need. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 208. Music, as always, is by Simon Wag. And actually, my son Fisher Wag is about to come out with some new music, and I might link you to that as it comes up. If you'd like to get a hold of me for any reason, I am jeff@builttogo.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. And until next time, let us remember this quote from Adam Savage, which states, failure is always an option.